especially companies right now, they put the best title or best candidate ever they can ever find. Of course, MIT PhD in robotics. Okay, go find these people. But MIT PhD in robotics, likely they want to become professor, or they are working for Waymo self-driving car. Why is it work for Shell Oil, right? People always put the best possibilities in the job description. Well, we realized that whatever they said in the job description, you don't need to have everything. You must have very strong customer empathy. You're here to solve problems. You're not there to use AI. So we should understand the pure customer empathy to understand how we solve problems for customers, what the true needs and desire. And only if AI is suitable, yes, let's go out for use AI. Number one thing, that's why my first product, we didn't even think about using AI until we understand this is what we need to happen, different things. We read about that's the way to go. Number one thing. So number two thing to create successful AI product is...
This is an interview with Dr. Nancy Lee, experienced entrepreneur, as well as director of products, YouTuber, and she has been featured on Forbes. Dr. Lee is currently the CEO of PM Accelerator, an accelerator for product managers. Whether you are starting or a senior product manager, her platform will help you improve your product management skills. She also did a PhD in 3.5 years, and this is very fast. I took this opportunity to ask her everything about the PhD. If it's worth doing, who should do one, if she would do one right now, and what she thinks about the graduate studies versus online education. We also talk about her impressive background switching into artificial intelligence. So if you are trying to switch fields to go into artificial intelligence, this episode might be super relevant for you. But before we dive in, please don't forget to leave a like and a 5-star review if you enjoyed this episode. It helps the channel a lot. I also just wanted to quickly mention that I will be attending the GTC event in person happening between March 18 and March 21st in case anyone listening is also going. The event is amazing to discover how AI is currently impacting the different industries and to learn what's possible to do currently with AI thanks to NVIDIA technologies. There are tons of announcements, news, talks and trainings related to AI that you can both do in person in San Jose or remotely and completely free. I definitely recommend checking the event and attending if you can. I also linked to a few of my favorite sessions in the description below. The event is fully available online, but as I said, it's also in San Jose where I will be in March. I'll also be in San Francisco just a week after. So if you are around, please reach out if you'd like to chat. I'd love to. Now, let's jump into this episode.
So nice meeting you, Luis, and thank you for having me on your show. This is Dr. Nancy Lee, a director of product featured on Forbes. I've helped 100 people land the dream PM job offer in fan companies and unicorn startup and continue to get promoted as a product leader. But you're right. When I got started, I was a PhD student. I was also an immigrant who moved to the US with only $800 in my pocket to start my PhD journey at Boston University. And a few years later, I became one of the youngest engineering PhD from BU with a major in material science. And then later on, I started to discover my true passion, which is becoming a product manager. And gradually, I transitioned into product management from a systems engineering background. And then I also became a director of product within 4 years. And now I'm an entrepreneur and also a mom, and so starting my own coaching business called PM Accelerator and helping others to grow their product management career as well. And I also know that your channel actually specializes in AI, and actually I launched award-winning AI product, which I can tell you guys more later on, but this is my background. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Of course, it's my pleasure, and I definitely want to talk about your product manager and all your achievements in the field. But I wanted to do a small, relatively small parenthesis on your PhD to try to help the many that are listening that are either hesitant in doing a PhD or currently doing one, because I've got a lot of feedback after doing my video. And yeah. I also recently quit one, so it's definitely relevant now.
By the way, you're so brave to quit your PhD. I was thinking about the same thing. I'll tell you more why I didn't quit, but congratulations. You definitely should if you don't think the right path for you. I wanted to quit so much. Didn't succeed though, but you should. Congratulations. So proud of you.
Thank you. But why did you not quit on your end?
Okay. So the reason was when I started my PhD in 2009, the economy was very bad. But I knew when I got started in the first year, I just felt it wasn't for me. I will tell you more later on. But after I discovered it wasn't for me, and then when I want to create my PhD, that was, I just want to end with a master. That was 2 years later, 2011. The economy was still very bad. So at the time, to be frank, I wasn't able to quickly land a job at 2011. And especially it was a middle decision. Like I'm only in the middle of my PhD. So I had little time to prepare for my job hunting journey. So I wasn't able to even get a job right away in 2011. But this became my motivation to finish my PhD quickly. And actually, I was thinking maybe if I quit my PhD 3 years, it's still okay because I just wait for a year. But as I am finishing on my PhD, trying to quit my PhD at the 3 year mark, I discovered that I can graduate my PhD with only like half a year more. I was like, oh, then I can just hold it for another half a year. So I end up getting my PhD in 3.5 years. But the whole time from year two to year three, I was like, I want to quit. Let me just land a job. Once I land a job, I quit. That's a true reason. I eventually got my PhD, but in my mind, I was like, academia is not for me.
So if you were to not start over, but be currently right now, be in your second year and being able to find a job relatively easily, you would not hesitate and quit.
Exactly. If I had prepared better or economy was better, combination both. For example, right now, hey guys, you guys didn't know the economy is how much better compared to a 2008 recession. Everyone talking about tech layoff, whatever. There's still so many jobs out there. So many, even my student landing jobs every single week. And we're landing jobs from Meta, those fan companies still. Even if it's the slow hiring, layoff, you still land Meta offers and out there as a product manager. And many of them land head of product offer as in the AI company. Every single week this happens. Right. So if at the time in 2011, the economy is as good as right now, I would definitely be able to land some kind of job for sure. May not be joining fan companies, but then land some kind of job, I'll be like, I'm ready to quit.
Then who do you think is a PhD for if you would like quit without any hesitation?
Let's say who should stay on the PhD track.
Yeah.
I think PhD is mainly for people who love doing research for the rest of life, who has a patience to continue follow through the entire research experimental procedure, and who actually enjoy dive deeper and explore unknown unknowns. This is definitely the best career path for other people. For PhD was not for, which for people like me who want something fast paced, who also want something more focused on application, because there's a huge gap between research and application. And also depends on the type of field you're in. My PhD was in material science from Boston University. And I just didn't really like the topic I selected. It's very theoretical material science, even material science, it's applied material science. Your applied materials, something can be used directly in your microphone, I don't know, to make it better, or on top of rocket. And there's also another type of material science, which the ones I did is more focused on physics. Physics material science is very theoretical. You cannot see it in your hands. I think for people who are more focused on application, getting things used through your research, and those people should quit the PhD early, or unless you work on something that's very applicable in your PhD field, then you can stay longer. Or someone who shouldn't quit is, you know, if you stay for your PhD for another half a year and you can graduate, and like me, just stick to it. You will get PhD for only half a year longer. Just do it.
And how did you do that to do a PhD in only 3.5 years? Do you have any advice or tips to replicate a bit this process to make it faster?
Yes. On one hand, to be frank, I think it's a luck. On the other hand, and also have a lot of planning to make it happen, combination of both, because in the Chinese language, I'm Chinese, there's a way people describe that opportunities is only given for people who are prepared. So you need to be prepared. You also need to have luck, wait for the opportunity to exist at the right time. So the way I make my PhD much faster, which when I graduated, I finished within 3.5 years, and I also have 14 publications in total from different kind of journals, channels of applications. The way I did it is that number one, I actually really started early in producing papers because all my goal is I just want to leave early. I didn't like it. We're going to talk about why I want to quit. Personally, this is another reason I want to quit later on. Okay. So, but at the time, all I want is I just want to do something and finish early, finish fast so that I can just leave. But if you just finish your master without any publication, personally speaking, I feel like there's not much achievement. All I can tell other people is I quit my PhD. But what if I tell others, yes, I quit my PhD and got my master's, and I also have 5 applications, 2 applications, something, right? So I just want to have something I'm proud of, not just I am someone who's a quitter. So therefore, I just push myself, start early, do research early, work harder on the research aspect, and to speed up the process, intentionally speed up the process. Number two, I also decided to leverage resources and especially hang out with people that are smarter than me. And I went to Boston University, crossed a river. There's a river called the Charles River, and it's MIT and Harvard. They are all smarter than me. So I just hang out with MIT people. I use a library, and they told me more things about very cutting edge technology. I'm just very, very excited about the new field of research technology. So with their influence and guidance, I was able to get access to new things I never thought about or new innovation that can potentially invent leading to more research papers. So yeah, that's what happened. So, and there's a turn, you're the average of 5 people around you, right? So I just go to MIT all the time. Yeah. And I become smarter because I go to MIT and I went to BU at the time. So that's a third thing. A third thing, what I decide to do is I decide to invest in myself earlier in terms of different kind of skills. So there is, besides the PhD research skills, I also believe that public speaking skills is very important. And also writing skills is very important. So actually I start to learn different kind of skills because those kind of, for example, networking skills are also very important. So public speaking skills, networking skills, and actually open up so many doors for me to collaborate with other professors, any people outside, or whenever I publish a paper, I present myself in conferences, people to really enjoy my public speaking skills and also the research that I represent. This literally opened up so many collaboration opportunities as well. So all combination of 3 things, I was able to finish my PhD and also with 14 publications and in total through my entire journey. And interestingly, even after I land my first job, I was still doing like patents. I still have I think I have 2 patents already filed that were awarded and 1 more patent being like pending by the government. We're still doing this because all the accumulation of people I met, collaboration we had together, that was helping me to speed up my research and also growth and continue this process even after I land my PhD.
Wow. And I want to go back to the MIT. You went there to talk with people and exchange. And were they in the same field as you were, or like people in completely different fields? How did you manage to first introduce to them and just talk with them, exchange? And how was this exactly?
Yeah. So majority of them in the same field. I have someone who is only, I believe, 1 year older than me. He is the smartest PhD at MIT doing material science and same major. And he told me so much about different field, different, crazy, amazing person. So majority of the time I hang out with people in the same field or at least related field. Sometimes I get exposure to people like people like you. You're doing a computer science PhD, right?
Mm.
Yeah, sometimes I got exposure to people doing computer science PhD, other people, a robotics PhD, different kind of PhD, just for the purpose of learning. I'm also a very curious person in general. So not doing research doesn't mean that I'm not curious of discovering new things. Just means that I don't want to sit there, wait for a long time for my PhD research to turn into applications. Mainly application part of PhD is missing in a high level. So that's what's going on. And so how I got exposure to these people are the way I did it is basically I joined lots of social event at MIT. This also like, I also dance at MIT ballroom dancing team, the MIT ballroom dance team. So basically there are many event cross universities and they're open to public. So that I went there and meet people there. There's also like Chinese organization, whatever, those kind of events. They're open to public outside of school as well. So I got to meet people over there. But I also think that another important thing is when you network with other people, you need to be a fun person, right? People just not, we went to the same event, so hang out with you. No, you need to be sharp. You need to be fun. You need to be able to carry a great conversation. You also need to have something you need to like offer as well, in terms of what you can add to their group as well. But not very transactional for sure when you network with other people. Okay. So it has to be natural. Maybe what you can offer is have more fun person. Like MIT people more nerdy. I don't know. It's you're part of a group now. Cool. And that's it.
And would you feel that talking and exchanging with people in other fields helped more for your own PhD? For example, I'm just talking on the difference of generalists versus super specialists. Like, would you say that talking to people in tech and other PhDs or just other industries helped you during this process?
Yes. And actually helped significantly even more for my career as a product manager. During my PhD, it helps, but I didn't recognize how much it's helping me until I was growing my career as a director product in the AI space. Then the more I got exposure to people from different fields, the better I was able to do my job as AI product manager and director product. I also work on cloud product. Yeah, the exposure does definitely help significantly, but usually you don't see the result right away. You literally don't see the result right away. You're just getting exposure. You never know how soon you can use it. And when the inspiration is going to arrive, when, as I said, right opportunities arrived. I literally have a story regarding the exposure to different fields. Very interesting. My very first job out of my PhD, and another sad story, the youngest engineering PhD from Boston University became unemployed after I finished at age of 24. Finished PhD at the age of 24. I was like, okay, let me get a job. But still, I think that was 2012, 2013, the job market is still not good. And I was also a PhD. In general, I think PhD have a harder time to land a job because the field is very narrow. So immediately after I became the youngest engineering PhD, I became unemployed. I was, this is crazy. But I immediately used the same PhD skills and mindset and thinking to laser focus on how can I literally land a job faster. So there was the exposure helps me to land a job. Something very interesting happened. It happened multiple times because I already got exposed to MIT throughout my entire journey as a PhD. My very first job, the job opening said they're looking for robotics PhD, working for Shell Oil. And because my friend MIT passed me his job opening saying, hey, someone looking for robotics PhD. And I was like, I'm a material science PhD. My friend was like from MIT, maybe you can apply, just read the job description. I was like, okay. And I literally learned a job. I learned a job. The job opening said, we are looking for MIT PhD in robotics. But I killed my competition and I took jobs from MIT people. And the way it happened was that I got exposure to robotics PhDs even when I was undergrad. I was part of robotics club before when I was undergrad, long time ago. I just know it. I roughly know stuff in the robotic space. I'm not doing research, but I know application very well. In general, I know application very well. I know customers very well. That also help people to become product manager later on down my road, down the road as well. So that exposure earlier during my undergrad just make me being able to pick up robotic stuff faster and also being able to read the robotics paper faster.
Yeah.
And then I also ping any robotics friends at MIT, say, oh, this is what's going on. Da, da, da. People can quickly teach me something and they get it really fast. And then also has something to do with interview skills and especially the specific jobs for robotics PhD is not based on research. Mm. If I don't compete with research, I can take over jobs from MIT PhDs. But the job is basically we want someone MIT robotics PhD, but work on engineering product to create something new that has something to do with robotics. So I went in an interview, I told them how much I know about robotics, all my past experience, exposure, and I landed a job, took the job from MIT people. They might hate me. It's okay. That was 10 years ago. So I can tell the story now.
So your experience, your personal experience with the club that you were in, the projects you did, and just networking and improving your communication skills basically helped you land a job in like a field that is just completely different as your PhD. So it was even more valuable than doing the PhD itself?
I personally think is as important because they still want to hire a PhD.
Yeah.
They still want to hire a PhD. I had a PhD title. My PhD wasn't in robotics, but because I was part of the robotics club when I was undergrad, which is also a long time ago, we also got like some robotics competition. I was winning some robotics competition, but I was able to demonstrate not having a PhD in robotics doesn't mean that I don't know robotics.
Yeah.
But I got a PhD title. So combination of both helps. And at the same time, regarding MIT, which I'm the best PhD from Boston University is as good as any PhD can find at a BU, at MIT. So you can just give me a chance to see how much I know, to test me, ask me anything about robots, blah, 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 different things. Test me, see how good I am in interview. And then I was able to pass all the interview questions. Because I was like, oh, you are right. You are as good at MIT PhDs, even if you're from BU. I said, yes, you should hire me. And they made me offer.
And you think you wouldn't have been able to land a job without the PhD title? Like they were only looking for people just because of the title or because some skills that are only developed during a PhD?
After they hired me, they hired someone with a master's degree from MIT in robotics as well. So they lowered the bar later on.
Okay.
And I do think even if I don't have a PhD, but if I have the same skills, I can still convince them to hire me. But have at the time, given I'm the youngest engineering PhD from BU, I can just tell them and convince them to give me a chance. Yeah. So it's, but even if I get master's, I think I can still convince them anyway.
But that's through like very powerful communication skills and just negotiation. And if we take the example of a PhD in robotics, do you think someone can just do like robotics related projects or a club during university or whatever and work very hard and land the same job or a better job than someone doing a PhD? Like, is there something, are the companies still only looking for the titles or is it just relevant to like what you can actually do?
I think it's more focused on what you can actually do. This was proven many times in my career, in many, many different times through my career for sure. Especially companies right now, they put the best title or best candidate ever they can ever find. Of course, MIT PhD in robotics. Okay, go find these people. But MIT PhD in robotics, likely they want to become professor or they are working for Waymo self-driving car. Why is it work for Shell Oil, right? People always put the best possibilities in the job description. And also, I've taught like hundreds of people, almost 1,000 people right now landing a job. Well, we realized that whatever they said in the job description, you don't need to have everything.
Yeah.
So, and now employers also become smarter. They know they put the best case scenario. They also know some part of the best case scenario need to have a discount when they really hire someone who can do the job. So therefore, I think the entire industry has shifted and the recruiting process has shifted. And same thing as when I directly changed my career into product management, that I was a systems engineer and into product management. And then first job working on AI product management. And then I joined cloud and then decentralized cloud as a director. Many different times I shift again and again and again. It has proven the employers are looking for someone who is actually capable of doing a job than just having a title. Of course, if you tell others you're a Harvard MBA, people probably will like look at you twice. So, you're great. Let's see what he can do, right? So if you have better brand behind you, it will help you. But help doesn't mean that it will guarantee a success.
Mm.
So people eventually who became successful are real skills they have built. So that's also the teaching philosophy inside of my PM Accelerator, where I teach people different, the real skill doesn't have to be a title, different things. And many different people never went to Ivy League school. 99% of my students do not go to Ivy League school. They have breakthrough. They work for fan companies right now.
Hey, I'm interrupting this episode just to remind you to leave a like and a 5-star review. It helps the podcast a lot. And if you enjoy it, that's the easiest and best thing you can do to support my work. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy the rest of this amazing discussion. And did the skills change along with this? Like with the shift of not requiring a PhD to being able to find a job through projects and like self-development, are the companies still looking for the same skill set that were before developed during the PhD and now on your own? Or the required skill set to find a job changed over the last few years?
I think depends on the type of jobs and also depends on the industry you're in. For example, if it is a job like you're doing material science research for 3M, like inventing new materials that be used for, Elon Musk sending the rocket to the space, right? I think those kind of hardcore skills are kind of important. They won't change that much because it's critical. It is very advanced. If you go through like PhD training, how can you make materials sent into the space? And also mission critical. They don't want to fail. They want to blow up. It's very expensive. We watch all the SpaceX launch in my home every time they launch it. Taking my 2-year-old son to watch those like space launch as well. So SpaceX launch. So we know how mission critical it is, right? So for those kind of opportunities, I don't think companies are willing to take a risk or lower the bar significantly. For other industries, for example, for tech industries, which I'm specialized in, definitely, they loosen the criteria. You don't have to be the exact knowing computer science, getting ABCD degrees, as long as you can prove that you know how to do it and the skills you have picked up by building your product portfolio. And by the way, guys, you can go to my YouTube channel where we talk more regarding product portfolio. That's the examples of how people gain skills without getting a degree. And many of my students have fantastic product portfolio show. Now, see, I can do this. See the examples I can show. Well, you're right. I don't have a degree in this and that. But lots of people do not have the exact same degree they're looking for. And even the job description in the tech industry right now, for let's say for the product management space, they make it very broad. If you go to Meta product manager job openings, and even Meta AI product manager job opening, they will say the degree will be you're getting engineering degree or business degree or related field or MBA. Basically, everything. Anything or even for degree, like technical product manager, something technical, they won't say it has to be computer science. They said engineering related degree or computer science. Those are good for us to consider your strengths and the background, and if you can do the job. So it is everything right now.
You mentioned that you are teaching people for interviews and just product management as well. Why did you not choose the professor path at university since you had the PhD and you could go that way as well?
Oh, very good question. I have an amazing story about this. Surprise me. That's why I never go back to academia. So, I love teaching. Oh, I forgot to tell you guys, I started my nonprofit this year called PMA Kids. So each of the students in my paid program, we give away one free education for teenager kids who came from middle-income families. And this year we start our nonprofit. Actually, my long-term goal is actually working on my nonprofit. This, all my coaching is something down the road, happened to happen, but mission is literally bringing the education for middle-income families because I was very broke. I told you guys I moved to the U.S. with only $800 in my pocket. My family never had a vacation until when I was age of 20. Our family was very, very broke. And I knew there are thousands or little Nancys out there who need jobs and who need help, who need the skills to break the glass ceiling. So that's why the nonprofits is always something I love to grow. And then this, my coaching business, my company, and right now just became something before I can really create my nonprofit, is any problem I can solve right now, which I discovered this huge gap. People really want to break into product management or upgrade their career to become director, senior PM, but I was able to make it much faster than other people. So I started to teach. So that's the whole process, starting my own company. And something very interesting happened. After I started my own company, I was like, you know what? I also want to teach in school, you know, not just start my own school. I start my own school already. Why don't I just like teach for MIT, you know, like teach for those schools? And I reach out for those like professors. I was like, you know, I launched the award-winning product. So my first AI product receives Mayer's Best Practice Award. And then the second product I launched is called 5G Edge. It's the edge computing product. In collaboration with Amazon and Microsoft, that was the first time in the world people had launched and used this like 5G edge computing product in the world. And it's like huge news in the industry. I was one who launched it with a product manager, everything. And that was, I have enough credentials to go to MIT to teach product management, right? And with real life examples, award winning, everywhere on the news, okay, in the mayor's office, give me an award. Come on. At least I need to be an adjunct professor or teach one lecture. I can add so much value. Guess what? I reached out to MIT professor and NBU and other schools. But the only school respond back to me is MIT. So I use it as an example, okay? So guess what MIT professor said? So Nancy, how many research papers have you published in the journal of product management? I was like, excuse me? The answer is no, but I published 14 papers as a PhD in the material science field and robotics, and 2 patents, by the way, 2 patents, okay? One of the patent is about machine vision, which is based on AI, and you see how people use my product, how much money we use, we got award from da 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 da. Well, yes, I haven't published papers on the journal of product management, but I'm more than qualified to teach because I got PhD, I published paper before. I also launched products with real life experience. I think MIT students will be very happy for me to teach them in real life how to apply what they learned in school into different top tier companies with Amazon, Microsoft. Don't you think MIT students will be so much more competitive and so impactful once they graduate? They were like, Nancy, once you publish more papers, come back to me. I was like, excuse me, why we're still talking about papers? You know, papers in the journal of product management, then come back to me. That's why I don't think I will never really like go back to academia. There's also, I believe that the concept of academia is mainly superficial, which will go back to original reason I want to quit my PhD. It's not application. It's not real life. It's they're doing research, public papers represent your good. I can represent, I'm cutting edge, the best in the industry through many different other ways. People literally using a product, getting a word, like crazy stuff going on. No, I want to see research papers, you know? I think how academia, seeing other people being successful or having enough achievement capability to teach, is very different from people outside academia.
Yeah.
So maybe I will never go back unless MIT change opinion. I think sometime in the future, they will change the opinion. Hopefully one day invite me back to the commencement speech. Then I will plug in this little sneak peek in the commencement speech. Well, I hope one day it will happen. But it's different. It's a very different mindset and methodology who has authority to teach or not teach in those schools.
To me, it's just very weird that product management is looking for research rather than product management experience. That's just extremely weird. There's no better proof that you know what you're doing if you've built successful products. It's like,
yeah, people ask me using it and making tons of revenues and getting Mayor's Best Award, Practice Award. What other thing can prove you know product management more than product has been used by other people? It's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy. And from MIT, which is representative for the entire industry. If MIT looking for people with papers, research paper in product management, I think all schools are doing that right now.
Is the PhD title still and will still be super important, or is it like going away and you can learn similar concepts and be just as successful by learning online? What are your thoughts on online education or like self-education?
I think eventually those online education, self-education is going to replace the traditional education, but it's going to take a long time. Society may not want to accept the changes, because even I'm a mom right now, my son is only 2 years old. I still want my son to go to MIT, even if I knew it's all theoretical concept, but I plan to teach my son practical stuff by myself.
Yeah.
But it's a mindset of the psychology of the entire society. I don't think the university is going to go away, but I do believe that people understand having a degree is just because we've been going through the whole process as parents ourselves. In addition to that, people will pay way more attention outside of school to teach them real life practical knowledge through online education, self-education. Those are way more important beyond just having a title or PhD. So I definitely do not think it's valuable at all having the title. At least in the space you're in the tech industry, if you still have a PhD, do some research. Okay, at least in tech, it doesn't matter. Maybe in the medical field, a doctor, I still want to see a doctor that have a doctor title. Depends on the industry. For tech industry, definitely no. Medical field, please doctors, take some doctor's training, get a doctor title, please. What's your opinion on that? You quit your PhD, what do you think? Do you think it's valuable or not valuable?
Well, I definitely was going through my PhD because of the title. Like, of course, research was fun. I love doing research, but for the courses and just the learning aspect, I was actually learning a lot more and like learned pretty much everything on by myself online, either on YouTube or articles or books or whatever. But like school didn't taught me a lot just because I was like too excited and too motivated to learn. And YouTube helped me a lot just because I wanted to make videos explaining things. So I learned the things that I wanted to explain. Mm-hmm. And so I learned everything like before school could teach me those things, like for courses that are 3 hours per week or something like that. So I don't know. I feel like, of course, titles are still somewhat important. I guess master's is maybe more important in the sense that it's more accessible and it's still well seen. Whereas a PhD is like really long and maybe not worth all the time invested. But yeah, it definitely depends on what you want to do. Like in the AI space, I guess that doing a PhD is definitely more for research, or like trying to aim for a researchy role at Google, Meta, or whatever, the bigger companies, or being a professor. But otherwise, I think you are way better off doing just a master's and in parallel trying to either create some startups or create products, or just like work on open source code or do anything that is applied, I think is like much more valuable than anything you will do at school. You are the expert, but in job interviews, I'm sure that like on my own, for example, I had job interviews during my undergrad studies just to find internships. And during those job interviews, I was always talking about a game, an app that I was developing and that I shared and made some money off. And I was never talking about school or whatever I did in the school. It was just like, how did I came up with these ideas and how did I learn to code myself for the Android apps and for the iOS apps and whatever. So I really think like the project that you do without just following school and following everyone is what matters.
Exactly. Exactly. We're on the same page. That's why we're in our language with a product portfolio in the product management space. Same thing with your project to us is a product portfolio. Mm. Why don't show others you can do it than just following something theoretical? And yeah, by the way, how long did you stay with a PhD before you quit?
Just a bit over a year. So not that long.
Nice. You didn't waste too much time. Nice for you. Yeah. If you want to quit as early as possible, this is the best. This is the best. And also, especially for the space of computer sciences, the space you're in. Yeah. The project itself, building some app, showing other people, I built some app, see this.
Yeah.
Made some money out of it already. That is way more valuable. And I also believe that other skills, the school doesn't teach you, such as public speaking skills,
yeah,
networking skills, business skills, any other skills school doesn't teach you, and that you can use the time. It's a return on investment of your time. Mm. And now as a mom, I just I have very little time in my life. Yes, all the time, very valuable. So how you use your time to really grow yourself with a growth mindset is very critical. So use your time wisely.
Yeah, completely. I couldn't agree more. Now you are in the AI, more in the AI space than in your PhD, obviously. And as you said, you graduated in material science. So how did you make the switch into artificial intelligence? How did you learn more about the field and then were able to land a job in the AI space?
Actually, I took many different classes. For example, when I start product management, oh, first of all, my product management skills, I went to MIT to learn product management skills at the time, because that was long time ago, 2015, I think, 2015. It's a part-time school at MIT. So basically I got certificate in product management from MIT. It's a part-time school at MIT. I learned 1 year from MIT for product management. At the time, I didn't see any good product management training anyway. But right now, there's way more product management training. People should come to my website, drnancy.com, PM Accelerator, you learn more, okay? Yeah, lots of better courses. At that years ago, there's not that much training. So I took training from MIT first regarding product management. And then regarding I became an AI product manager, the interesting part was when they hired me, it wasn't an AI product manager position. It was an IoT product manager position. As long as you know IoT, you know sensors, and that's easier to learn compared with AI. But after I joined the company and I realized that, hey, we do need to use AI, which is machine vision, to build a product. So my first product is to help cities reduce car crashes. When you help them reduce car crashes, originally, so I just put some sensors, different things out there. Then we realized that, well, the traditional sensor doesn't work anymore. We should use cameras. And then traditional camera doesn't work anymore. We should use machine vision inside a camera. That's where the AI concept and also the needs of AI was born at the time. Because it was my idea to do it. So I'm the first person who just need to build it. But in order to build it, I actually took different kind of AI classes to learn about what's machine vision, right? What's different things out there? And there are many AI classes on Coursera. Actually, I have a YouTube video regarding the only four ways to become an AI product manager, and with different kind of recommended classes on Coursera. I recommend people to take as well. So you can take like AI classes over there as well. So that's how I learned AI knowledge. Basically, be technical, really be technical, learn about everything related to AI so that can help me perform my job better, communicate with my engineering team better. But it doesn't mean that you need to code. The coding is different from understanding. My purpose is making technical decisions with my team with a full understanding of how to use AI to reduce car crashes for my customer.
So I will assume, please correct me if I'm wrong, that almost the most important skill for a product manager is to keep learning. You basically had to learn about AI to implement it, to decide to implement it in a project. Mm-hmm. So you have to keep up to date with new technologies. You have to understand them to know when to apply what. So how do you, I guess you love learning and you are curious, as you said, but how do you stay up to date? How do you learn all those new technologies and decide, how do you make a decision to use them or not? Do you just test and try a lot of things, or you already know what to implement or not? Like how what is the process?
Yeah, the two ways to do it. And number one, you must, actually three ways. Number one, you must be curious yourself. Whenever you heard new things, breakthrough like generative AI is, my strength is in computer vision, machine vision. So we know this very well. So next part is generative AI. So it's new things, which means that people need to learn more about this. I also have several recommended generative AI courses on my YouTube channel. People can go there and learn more. So my point is, you need to be curious first to know, oh, there's something new. Everyone talks about it now. So let's learn about it. There are free AI courses out there. Lots of free ones. So take those. So number two, regarding learning, is identify the right group of people that you can hang out with. So it's more hanging out with some of the club of people who is smarter than you, continue learning from someone smarter than you. They have more resources. They know where to go, where to get those opportunities. And now third part is actually, again, you should continue learning. And I recommend this AI newsletter called Big Brain. So they send out new trends. You just need to be up to date about those different things. And then whatever new things you discover, you can find different courses to take. That's in a high level what I recommend everyone to do. And of course, choose those courses wisely. Lots of courses are very entry level, in my personal opinion. You need to be able to filter those courses.
What do you think made your AI related products successful? What was the secret recipe?
I personally believe that it's a very strong customer empathy and know the end-to-end product management lifecycle and knowing how exactly to build a better AI product. Right now, there's a rush for people to become AI product manager. So many people email me and say, become AI product manager, I have no experience, what should I do? And teach them how to do it. Obviously, I do land many AI PM jobs, no problem. But how to really define a successful AI product manager is based on how successful a product is. So now how to build a successful product comes from the following. Number one, you must have very strong customer empathy in terms of you're here to solve problems. You're not there to use AI. Lots of people think it's fancy, they use AI, whatever. No, I literally have someone tell me, in the live case studies, when I teach people, we always teach live, real life case studies in my program. We don't teach theoretical stuff. I will teach you high level theoretical stuff, but let's talk about real life. Okay. And then the real life, I had one time, my students were just only thinking about AI. She was like, well, one of the product strategy, we're teaching product strategy case saying that if you're a Delta CEO, what would you do? Right. So one of the long-term roadmap she created as a Delta CEO, she said, oh, we should just use AI to automate the airline fly pass control. I was like, oh, you're going to kill people. And you shouldn't alternate fly pass just based on AI. It is very bad, very dangerous. And Delta alternate your fly pass. United doesn't alternate the fly pass. You're going to run into United planes soon. You not only kill yourself, you kill United airplane. Crazy, right? So which means that the students, when she talk about AI, she's thinking about how can I do something fancy. But she doesn't understand the customers. So we should understand the pure customer empathy to understand how we solve problem for customer, what the true needs and desire. And only if AI is suitable, yes, let's go out for use AI. Number one thing, that's why my first product, we didn't even think about using AI until we understand this is what we need to happen, different things. We read about that's the way to go. Number one thing. So number two thing to create successful AI product is understand the relationship between data, models, and user feedback. It's like a spin wheel linking to each other, and they spin even bigger and bigger each time. All right, so they need to make technical decision to understand what type of data, how much data, was the training data, was the test data flying into this model? Of course, model, someone smart from MIT can build this model, but you need enough AI, the training model, training data, and also the data usually very expensive. How much data is enough? That's a very good question. And then once you train it, you need to put it on the users, and user also have more user data, more user feedback, and then you spin back to model to run it again to keep on improving the outcome. So it's a spiral, like spinning wheels, an upward spiral as well. So that's the best way to build a great AI product. But to control this, like the spinning wheel, that requires lots of like decision making, how much data is enough, you need to make technical decision, also understand the cost of bringing in those data. Sometimes like purchasing those data or creating those data is also very expensive. There's many different kind of fine tuning that need to happen to create the best AI product. But at the end of the day, our AI product is, I'm so happy that was, the goal is to help city reduce car crashes. And within like 6 months, we already deployed in city of Boston, received Best Mayor's Practice Award. And also they put my product inside the entire suite of smart cities product. We have different kind of like parking product, my product, different product together. And our product is won like $200 million private partnership with Sacramento. It is a spiral effect. Once you have great product, it can impact more people, generate more revenue for other people as well.
Could you help me and other people that, like, for example, on my own, I'm working in my startup. And so we don't have like a structure yet that has a product manager with technical people, and et cetera. And so could you help me and listeners understand what exactly is a product manager? Like what's a day-to-day like, or just the specific roles and decisions that you have to take? And I assume you are also leading a team. So what kind of team when it comes to an AI product?
Yeah, actually I have a YouTube video on my channel regarding day in life as a product manager. People can go there and check everything end to end. Here, let me give you an overview summary. You don't need a product manager in the very stage of any startup because your CEO is acting as a product manager. Mm. So the CEO of a company and the product manager is 70% overlap in real life. And that's why your company doesn't need it right now, because it's still at the very, very beginning of the startup space. As your company become more mature, or company already find product market fit, and the CEO need to be stepping away a little bit more hands off, you need a product manager who step in to really manage the product everything end to end as well. So that's why product managers is called the CEO of product. The other 30% differences between product manager and the real startup CEO is the fundraising, recruiting, everything. That's what CEO is doing. So what is a product manager in those companies is that product manager manages the everything end-to-end product management lifecycle. That's starting from like interviewing customer, understanding the needs and desire of customers, and work with engineers to build a product. And especially for AI product manager, not only like software engineers, we need to work with data scientists who build a model and also make technical decision regarding how much data is needed to train those data model. So if we decide this is this much data, product manager need to go out to find those solutions in terms of, do we buy or not buy? Do we hire someone to create some data for us? For example, many of our training data earlier was created in-house. There's many decisions we make with engineers. And then product managers also help with go-to-market strategy. We launched the product, how to bring it to the hands of the customers, more people will use it. And then with the pricing model, so basically everything end-to-end as a product manager. And the team is basically, because you're more mini CEO product, is everybody in the company, engineers, designers, data scientists, and also legal team when you're about to launch it, and also sales marketing team, we need to sell it as well. So everything end-to-end is very, very exciting role. But when your company is very small, the CEO itself is acting as a product manager. Maybe you didn't know you're serving product manager, but you are acting as a product manager the whole time. But lots of people didn't follow the right product management methodology trained by big tech companies. They probably will make mistakes. For example, for customer interviews, Maybe they didn't know how to prioritize the needs from customers, how to make sure something's near term and short term. Maybe the way they ask questions. I have seen many entrepreneurs, the way they ask questions from customers is misleading, or you're already kind of pushing customer towards one direction and you didn't know. So that's why you get some false result from customers. So the many different things could happen just because you don't have the proper product management training. But functionality wise, it's just like CEO of a startup.
Oh, that's like way more clear. And it sounds super exciting as well. If I ever go into the industry a bit more, or like as an employee, I might be aiming for that role.
Yes, you should. It's very fun. I just think as a CEO of a startup, that's what you do. Exactly what you accept, hiring people, accept fundraising. Yeah. Very exciting. So what kind of, can you disclose what kind of AI startup are you working on right now?
Yeah, of course. It's the startup is called Towards AI. And we are currently building, there's two facets of the company. One is like media a bit more, where we create articles and we have a newsletter in the field and a large social media where we share anything AI education related. And we have the other facet where we are currently working on our paid course that are super applied to get into the AI space.
Very cool. Do you have users right now, or is it at the very beginning of building the product?
No, I just quit the PhD to focus on that. So it's still not, like, we are building the platform and the courses, so we don't have any users right now. But we do have like a somewhat good following on our social media and Discord and the newsletter and everything. So I hope it will convert somewhat well. But also, they are all students in the field. And we kind of not use them, but we leverage the community that we have to ask, like, what do they really need and how can we build something useful to them?
This is awesome. This is awesome. And how exciting. It's way better than a PhD thesis. This is amazing. Also very applicable.
Yeah.
That's way more fun. And focusing on your own career and building something that you're truly passionate about. That's the best part.
It's been extremely fun. And I currently, like, I've went to some research conference, because on YouTube, I often partner with research conference to share and explain research on my channel on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And during those conferences, like when I went in late October, I think, I talked to many current students and PhD students, and how I was selling my upcoming courses were basically all that university doesn't teach you. So like everything to deploy a model to like the real world part of the product cycle of an AI based product. Yeah, it's a bit funny. I'm very, like, I'm going far off where I was with the PhD and my previous path.
True. Send this recording to MIT professors.
Yeah, I don't think it will go well.
I think so. I think they will ban your YouTube channel. They were hacked. One day it's hacked. It's not us. It's not us.
It's an AI. It's a deep fake.
Using AI. What's the best methodology to hack someone's YouTube channel? Oh, bingo. Okay, hacked next day.
Exactly. Well, perfect. I just have one last, it's not a question, but I would love if you could talk a bit more about your own product manager accelerator, what you do and who is it for, who should join it, like what background does undergrad or unemployed or just professionals, who is it for and what do you do there?
Product manager accelerator is designed for people who either want to break into product management or someone who's already a senior product manager who want to upgrade their career. So Product Manager Accelerator, the way it designed was to solve the pain point of lots of people that saying 70% of students who doesn't have product management experience like you, but you come from very different background, very entrepreneurial, have the right skill set to become a product manager. So we teach them what's the right methodology from tier one company like Fan Company, how Fan Company, Google, these kind of people create amazing product, what it look like to work for these companies, and through real life cases where everything we teach is real life. If you design YouTube feature, who you talk to, what it looks like, what's long-term, short-term roadmap. We also teach you product strategies, such as if you're a CEO of Google, what would you do in the space of AI? So everything very hands-on. Now, for people who already have PM experience, most of them were stuck in the career in terms of, hey, I have 5 years, 6 years, 10 years experience. This happened many times to 30% of my students. I'll even have senior director of product from Western Union join my company. He just felt his career was stuck. He deserves to get paid more. He deserved getting into even better position. So we teach them how to package their past experience and pass those interviews to achieve the next level. So the goal, but regardless, you have PM experience and no PM experience, we want you to build a product portfolio to better like highlight your strengths and also know what to say in the interview and also give you the right product management training based on what your existing experience. And very, very exciting to see that actually through PM Accelerator, 25% of our offers came from tier one companies, all the fan companies and tier one company, Tesla, all the very exciting companies. And we have seen students getting paid as high as $800,000 per year from Meta. So our program is known for getting into the top tier offers in industry and such as VP of product at Google, senior director of product at Google, all those kind of tier one company also being invited to speak to our student in private as well. So we have many different opportunities for people to achieve their career success through our offer guarantee program. So yeah, anybody who's interested, go to DrNancy.com or PM Accelerator, both emails, both website link to each other and learn more. And hope everybody can jumpstart the exciting PM career.
Awesome. That's super motivating. And I definitely also recommend to look into it. Just even if you are not, like I think a lot of people think that product management, for example, as in an AI-related company, it requires lots of AI technical knowledge. Whereas I feel like it's way more of a more general understanding and yeah, just understanding how it works and what do you need to build it, but not like how it really works, like inside the weights and the training and et cetera. Like you don't need to go very technical and in-depth into the technical details to become a product manager. So that's super motivating and it's really cool that you are making this more accessible to many people and to teenagers as well. So that's really amazing. Thank you so much for the time, for sharing all the insights, both on the PhD and the product management and just AI and life in general. It was super useful to me and I assume to many of the listeners as well. So thanks a lot again for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Luis. And everyone, feel free to reach out with more questions. I'm glad to see you in our next episode.